Blog Talk Radio.
Find out life's a game of inches. So is football. Because in either game, life or football, the margin for error is so small. I mean, one half a step too late or too early, and you don't quite make it. One half second too slow, too fast, you don't quite catch it. The inches we need are everywhere around us.
Hell yeah.
They're in every break of the game. Every minute, every second. On this team, we fight for that inch. On this team, we tear ourselves and everyone else around us to pieces for that inch.
All righty there, and hey, good Wednesday evening to you all, and welcome to, just one of the few remaining Red Zone Blitz programs that we've got scheduled for this coming season. And as I've been pointing out for the past couple of weeks, I must be honest, it depresses me a bit. But wow. I got to tell you, what a week of programming we have got prepared for you. And we're starting off, you know, I understand you're used to the program coming to you on Tuesday. We're coming to you a day late this week. We're kind of moving things around a little bit since the beginning of January. It's a new year. We're going to have some new sports programs jumping in here shortly. And so we're trying to play around with the schedule a little bit. And this is our first program for the week. But as I pointed out, what a week of programming we have got waiting for you as we go through the next couple of days. We got a big one tomorrow night. We got a big one on Saturday. And, yeah, we even have a big one for you on Sunday, and I'll let you know all about those as we go through the program here this evening. Joining me, as usual, Brandon, how we doing tonight?
Good. Ready to talk some football.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. And, you know, we went through the divisional rounds, and that's what I'm saying. I mean, you know, I don't know how you can't. I mean, listen, you know, I know you're the one that keeps saying it's exciting. And, yeah, it is. And I think we did see better games this past weekend than we saw the weekend before, albeit we're going to get into some of those as to how much far better they were with regard to things like penalties. But I got to tell you, the thought that there are just two games this weekend and then we're going to go a week and then we're going to come back and then we got the final game, that's just darn right depressing. I don't give a damn what anybody says.
that's why football's so good, because it's only for a short period of time. It's not a long, drawn out, dragging on baseball season, or, you know, hockey and basketball, which nobody really cares about till halfway on and in the playoffs. You know, it's short and to the point, and that's why it's good. It makes you miss it.
Yeah, and what makes it, of course, feel so much shorter, of course, is the fact that there's really only one game a week. And that's what makes this whole period of time go so much faster. I mean, that football season just seems to fly by.
I don't know. The NFL is doing their best to make it, you know, you got a Sunday night, a Monday night, a Thursday night. They mix in a few Saturdays at the end. They're doing their damnedest. And
obviously,
there's rumors we might have a Friday night wild card game next year.
Right, and for those diehard football nuts like you and I, yes, obviously they're adding games. But when you talk about just your one team or a couple of teams that you follow, there's only one game a week.
Right,
and so if you live for that purpose, wow, it's tough. Anyhow, we want to open up the lines, because I got to tell you, if there is a program that you're going to want to be listening to and perhaps maybe even chiming in on, particularly if you're a Denver Broncos fan, because we're going to be joined here in a couple of moments by Chad Jensen from MileHighHuddle.com, website over there on the internet. all Denver Broncos news media website. Again, milehighhuddle.com. You're going to want to check them out. Great content over there. I was reading a whole bunch of their stuff just recently. I'm going to bring up a couple of things that Chad wrote up over there once we get him in here. But you're going to want to jump in, perhaps maybe if you are a Denver Broncos fan, you might want to be jumping in on part of our conversation with Chad. And the way to do that, well, you can pick up the phone, 347-826-9964. 347-826-9964. If you're listening via a computer and you are Skype capable, just hit the little blue Skype button and that'll put you through to us loud and clear. And I'm looking at the chat room right now, wide open, and looks like we've got quite a few guests in there. So I thank those folks who are listening in right now with us. Brandon, you had said it last week that you kind of thought the games this past weekend, the divisional round, were going to go chalk. And I kind of went along with you a little bit, but I said that if there was one game that made me a bit nervous, it was going to be the Indianapolis Colts and Denver Broncos game. Because I said, and my reasoning for that was that having watched this Broncos team as closely as we did here at Frat House Sports, for various reasons, obviously, but watching them as closely as we did, you could see that in the past, the past four, perhaps the last 5 weeks of the season, it was a very, very different looking team. And that's where we're going to start it out tonight. We're going to start it out with the only upset, or I guess the really real upset that there was all weekend long, and that was that the Indianapolis Colts advanced to the AFC Championship, and they'll get their opportunity to play in New England this coming Sunday. And they did that by going through Denver and beating the Broncos 24-13. Now, the issues with the Denver Broncos, you know, we're going to get into once Chad jumps in here with us. So let's kind of just for a moment concentrate on the Colts side of the ball. Andrew Luck was okay. I mean, when you take a look at it, 27 of 43, 265 yards, two touchdowns, two interceptions, 76.2 QB rating. It's a typical Luck performance. I mean, that's the way I look at it. I'm always sitting back and I'm amazed because so many people think that Andrew Luck, he's the second coming of this one or that one. And I don't know. The guy just seems to, he does okay. He gets the team where they need to be. And yet I don't think his numbers ever really, maybe with the exception of a handful of games, have ever really jumped out and said superstar at me.
A lot of comparisons are made, you know, with him and Peyton Manning, obviously, because he succeeded him in the Colts. And to a degree, they are kind of similar. I mean, Peyton Manning did have early success in year two. He did always put up, you know, pretty decent stats, and he was interception prone more so in the beginning of his career. So, I mean, yeah, I guess you can kind of draw the comparison a little. Now, it's, as time progresses with Andrew Luck, you'll see. I mean, we don't know what he's going to develop into. I mean, so far in his progression, I mean, this is his, if I'm not mistaken, his third full season.
Third,
so,
correct, yep.
You know, that's not bad. I mean, he's to the AFC title game in his third year. I think they've made the playoffs every year since he's been there. You know, he's had winning records every year. I mean, I don't know. It's kind of tough to argue. And this year, I'll tell you, he doesn't seem to have a lot of weapons around him. I mean, their running game fell completely off the map when Ahmad Bradshaw went down. Just in the last week or so, this Dan Heron's kind of been taken over for Trent Richardson, who can't even sniff the field, not even in special teams. So, you know, that's very telling. Their receiver core is not the greatest. I mean, Reggie Wayne's getting older. T.Y. Hilton's nice. He's a nice piece. But, they need a little more. You know, Colby Fleener and Dwayne Allen and tight ends are pretty potent combination. I mean, I think, you know, between that and Hilton has pretty much been, you know, bringing them along. Hakeem Nicks, I think, has been a bit of a disappointment, even though he did have a touchdown in this game. Doesn't seem to produce like he used to alongside of, Victor Cruz up there in New York. So, I don't know. I'm not quite sure what's missing, you know, short of, you know, replacing, you know, Reggie Wayne. I mean, Reggie Wayne has been playing hurt for quite a while. He's had a torn muscle in one of his arms, and he's been just playing through it, and he's clearly not the same player he was. So,
when you see the 90, when you see the 99 yards that the Colts put up on the ground this past weekend, Colts fans have got to be sitting there saying to themselves, "Yay, that's a good sign for us." I mean, that I think that's the highest number we've seen from this Colts team in at least, it's got to be at least a month and a half. I mean, seriously.
One thing you can point out about the rushing game, and you know, it's just an observation I made that, you know, Dan Heron had 28 attempts for only 63 yards, but he also had 8 catches out of the backfield. I think that's a pretty telling number. Not a lot of yardage, but at least they're involving a back out of the backfield. I think that's kind of been missing in their repertoire since Ahmad Bradshaw went down. So, you know, it seems like they found at least a, you know, a suitable replacement. I'm not going to say he's as productive, but, you know, at least it looks like they can function. I mean, if they functioned well enough to make it to the AFC title game.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's pretty impressive. I mean, even a weakened Denver Broncos is still a pretty solid team. You know, other than Peyton.
I guess maybe that's the question I would throw out there, and I'll throw it out there for our listeners, and I'll throw it at Chad when he jumps in with us as well. But I throw it out there for the listeners, anybody that wants to chime in on 347-826-9964. You know, as you point out, I'm not going to take – you're right. It's the AFC championship game. The Colts had to play one extra game that Denver didn't have to play. Let's take that into account as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to take anything away from the Colts. But the question that I would throw out there is this. Did the Colts win or did Denver lose? You know, that's the real question there.
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, the defense can only do so much. And Peyton Manning was clearly not able to throw the ball downfield. Anytime he tried to throw downfield, he was lofting it or floating it. It had no zip on the ball. No, you know, it was a wing and a prayer just to get it down the field. He clearly was not himself throwing. And, you know, we've speculated for weeks that he's been injured. I think we were both, you know, thinking it was probably more, you know, neck related to his arm strength kind of thing. But it turns out now it could just be a, you know, a quadricep injury in his leg. So, you know, they should have had, I don't know if they, you know, how you can do it, but they should have, I almost think they should have maybe pulled the trigger and see what Brock Osweiler could have done a little bit
right
in that second half. You know, this was your whole season right here. And, you know, you have a solid running game with C.J. Anderson and Ronnie Hillman filling in, you know, spotty, and the defense is solid. I just got to think you got to, at some point, you got to say, hey, have a seat, Peyton. Let's see what we can do. We need to get past this team. And it was a very beatable Colts team, and they just couldn't get the job done.
Yep. Well, a lot of questions. A lot of questions, and a lot of questions for our guest here that's joining us this evening from I'm assuming, Mile High, the city of Mile High. We got Chad Jenkins on the line with us from MileHighHuddle.com. Chad, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, guys. Appreciate you having me on.
You got it. We're breaking this one down, as you can hear. We jumped in on this one. I mean, we're going to break down all four of the games this evening before we're done tonight, but we started with this one because this one has the most intrigue. You know, we find out now that, obviously, as many of us had suspected, I mean, the media had suspected it, there's been a lot of speculation about it for weeks, that something was wrong with Peyton Manning. And now we find out that, in fact, that was the case. He played, what, the last four or five games with a torn quad. Brandon suggests here, perhaps maybe the bench should have just pulled him and thrown Osweiler in on Sunday. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, there's really, unless Peyton Manning is absolutely incapacitated and, you know, cannot stand up, he's going to be out on the gridiron. And, you know, that's just the way that he's wired. And with the Broncos, you know, for them to put their whole season on the line on an absolutely untested Brock Osweiler, who only started, I think it was, either 14 or 17 games in college, that inexperience, they're not going to risk their whole season on rolling the dice and hoping for the best. And, you know, with Manning, he had the torn quad. It was erroneously reported that he had two torn quads, but that's not true. He had the one, which, I mean, technically the Broncos have vehemently denied that he had a torn quad just because it would put them in the NFL's crosshairs for tampering with the injury report and possibly a fine. But nevertheless, Manning's issues were on display. I mean, with his neck injury and the problems with his nerves and the strength of his arm, Manning needs the full control of his entire body, including and especially his lower legs and the torque, and being able to plant and utilize that in part of his mechanical process and winding up and throwing. And with that compromise, we saw the result of that on Sunday.
Yep. In other towns and on other teams, we have heard about star players before almost sacrificing their own team for the sake of their playing. If I'm not mistaken, we heard a little bit about this in Washington with Robert Griffin III. And yet it seems in Denver, Peyton gets a pass. I don't know. I mean, in some respects, as big a Peyton Manning fan as I have been, and look, I'm going to be honest, I'm a little bit, Brandon will tell you this, it's kind of a running joke here at Frat House, I'm a little bit of a closet Denver fan. I kind of felt the same way Brandon did. I kind of thought perhaps maybe they should have shelved him if he was going to be playing. I mean, he's not doing anybody any good when he's lofting the ball up the way that he did on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, one thing to keep in mind is that, I mean, in Denver, the mood is very much, I would say the majority is anti-Manning right now. People are really fed up with, you know, his playoff failures, the way he played down the stretch. And, again, a lot of that can be chalked up to two things. One, nursing an injury. Not that, you know, I'm making excuses for Peyton Manning. He doesn't need me to do that, but he had the injury, and then when the Broncos went into St. Louis and got trucked in Week 11 and absolutely embarrassed on the road, it really forced the coaching staff to reevaluate their offensive identity. And if you guys remember, the Broncos, for basically until the end of the regular season, kind of transformed the face of their whole offensive operation and went kind of leaned on the run heavy. Almost to the opposite end of the spectrum. I mean, they went from throwing it 40, 50 times a game to, you know, running it 35, 38 times and throwing it 22. And I think a combination of that, Peyton Manning kind of having to relearn his role within the offense on the fly and then coping with his leg injury, and then also, you know, whatever was going on behind closed doors, the differences that Elway and Fox had, that if, you know, more and more of that's coming to light now, I think it all just kind of added up, and that's why we saw Manning kind of crumble on Sunday and not live up to the moment.
Well, hey, Chad, this is Brandon. I have a question for you quick. Now, as your team, as the team's going along, coming out of the halftime, they're still in this game. The Colts are not putting them away into the third quarter. With 5 minutes to go in the third quarter, they scored a touchdown to make it 21-10. I mean, at that point, your whole season rides on, you know, you need to score a touchdown, not just a field goal, but a touchdown. At some point, don't you got to say, hey, it's clear Peyton Manning can't throw downfield. We have a solid running game with C.J. Anderson, and Ronnie Hillman was nice, you know, a nice little spot back, and their defense is solid. You know, don't you think that can maybe make up for a little bit of an inexperienced Brock Osweiler? I mean, to me, it just seems hard to throw the whole season, you know, away at that point when you're still so close.
Well, it's kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't, because, you know, damned if you do is keeping Peyton Manning in, rolling the dice, hoping for the best. I mean, even with a compromised Peyton Manning down the stretch, the Broncos were still able to win four or five games, losing, I think, one, and that's only to the Cincinnati Bengals. And so the Broncos looked at it like, you know, here we are, you know, the chips are down, the whole season's on the line. We're going to roll the dice with Manning. But the flip side of that coin is, yeah, I mean, they could have chosen to bench Peyton Manning in favor of Brock Osweiler, and even halftime at the game possibly considered doing that. But at the same time, you know, they're going to dance with the girl they brought, you know what I mean? And they're paying him $19 million a year, and if Peyton Manning tells them that, you know what, guys, I'm good to go, shoot me up with some Toradol and we're good, then they're going to take him at his word.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and to be honest with you, in Denver, the organization is getting a lot of heat from the fans. I mean, you should listen to some of the talk radio in Denver. It's just they're really fed up with that. They questioned that same exact question has come up dozens of times over the last 2 days, 3 days now. And it really is something that the coaches haven't, in LA, I should say, hasn't really spoken to yet. But it is something that, you know, one day probably John Fox or somebody, or maybe Elway, will maybe answer that question for us and better help us understand why they decided to stick with Manning.
Yep. Hey, well, okay.
Go ahead.
Hang on. I just have one quick follow-up. Do you think the organization might have said, hey, we're going to hang with him, and if we lose, okay, that gives us our out so we can have our amicable divorce? Do you think that had any part of it?
Boy.
In other words, I mean, it's a lot easier to have a separation of coach and team, you know, after a first round playoff loss than, you know, say we make it to the AFC title game and we play tough, you know, up in New England and
Wow. We're
only one breath away from the Super Bowl.
That's quite a conspiracy theory.
on that one, I would have to say no. I think that, you know, probably, I mean, Fox's record in the playoffs, in the way his team's performed, you know, primarily being unprepared, not living up to the moment, or ultimately what cost him his job. It didn't help, and I think the final catalyst that helped Elway make the decision, I mean, rumors are behind closed doors he was fuming about the Jay Glazer leak Sunday morning that, you know, if the Broncos lose, John Fox could be available because John Fox and Jay Glazer are close friends, and the Broncos are a really buttoned-down, tight-lipped organization, very much in the image of the New England Patriots in that regard. And for that kind of a leak to come out of the organization, it doesn't take a detective like Sherlock Holmes to figure out who that likely came from, John Fox.
Right.
And so John Elway was absolutely disgusted in that. John Elway was, you know, for a head coach not to be focused on the moment and to be focused on the game at hand and instead worrying about his positioning within the league and within the team and all that before the biggest game of the year just is not part of John Elway's mantra and mindset. And, you know, that was the icing on the cake and what led to, you know, the quote unquote mutual parting of the ways.
Yeah. Interesting. We are talking with Chad Jensen from milehighhuddle.com, Denver Broncos website. Please check it out, milehighhuddle.com. And if anybody wants to jump in with us, we're talking a little bit about, well, who'd have thunk that there would have been a meltdown? I mean, really, let's get it straight, in the past couple of days with the Denver Broncos, but that's what we're talking about. And if you have any comments or you want to jump in with us, 347-826-9964. 347-826-9964. Chad, you brought up the fact that there was an obvious game plan change, a day-to-day or a week-to-week game plan change about 5 weeks ago. It was incredibly apparent to us here at Frat House Sports as we watched it. I mean, it was so evident the very day that it occurred. The question I guess I throw to you is, was this something that was perhaps mutually agreed upon between the quarterback because he recognized his limitations at that moment and a coach that's really the game plan that he always wanted to run anyhow?
Well, I think the latter is more closely tied to why that happened. John Fox, by nature, is a conservative coach. You know, he kind of plays not to lose, ball control, grounded out. You know, and as long as his team has a chance to win it in the fourth quarter, he's happy. And, of course, that philosophy jived with Peyton Manning and his methodology – which made the marriage of Fox and Manning a little, you know, questionable from the very get-go. But ultimately, the buzz inside of Dove Valley is that decision. And no one knows for sure, so this still is speculation and rumor, but that decision to change the approach on offense and start leaning on the running game so heavily originated from John Fox, because as we saw from Adam Gase in 2013 and really from the Broncos in the first half of 2014, Adam Gase wants to put his foot on the gas, you know, put his foot on the throat, so to speak, and step on guys and throw it and utilize his future Hall of Fame quarterback's right arm and the elite weapons that they have. And so at the end of the day, who knows? It could have something to do with Manning's, you know, compromised health with his lower body. And it probably was a combination of the two. But ultimately, I think John Fox was the bigger culprit in that.
Interesting. Let's talk a little bit about the article that you put out there yesterday. And it was interesting because, of course, you bring up the Jay Glazer thing. I had not heard anything about any rumors of this before Sunday morning when Glazer broke it. And then I got to be honest, yours was the first website that I read about the rift between Elway and John Fox as well. And the question I throw at you, not a question, I guess, but really more of an observation, and a couple of us here have made it right here at Grad House Sports. Wow, how Denver kept a lid on this thing. Incredible that nobody knew that there were these kinds of issues going. I mean, for gosh sakes, I mean, it was well documented about Chicago's travails all year long. The New York Jets can never seem to keep anything under wraps. Amazing that Denver was able to keep this thing quiet. I mean, when you've got the star power of a Peyton Manning.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's something that has come to light more here in the last couple of days. And, you know, John Elway spoke to it a little bit yesterday when he met with the media with his press conference at noon. And basically he talked about that, you know, the biggest things he was disappointed in with John Fox as a head coach. He didn't mention the Jay Glazer thing or anything like that. What he mentioned was that he felt like the Broncos under John Fox never peaked at the right time. And that in the three playoff games that they've lost, the two divisional rounds where they had home field advantage and a playoff bye and then the Super Bowl, that the Broncos didn't go out kicking and screaming. Elway ultimately felt like, you know, not necessarily that it's okay to lose, but rather how you lose can sometimes be just as informative as, you know, losing in and of itself, or how you win even. And so he didn't like that, and ultimately he felt like he and John Fox differed on how best the Denver Broncos could overcome that obstacle and take the next step. And really it just comes down to he didn't like the toughness. He felt like there was a lack of, you know, preparation and intensity. And, you know, and really the Broncos have all the talent in place. I mean, their roster is as replete with talent as any in the league. And ultimately when it came down to it, just like in most NFL games or any football game for that matter, the more physical, the more intense team wins 99 times out of 100. And the Broncos failed to do that yet again in the playoffs. And that really kind of speaks to John Fox's approach as a coach. And it kind of helps us understand how he does or how he fails to prepare his team going into the postseason. And I just think he and Elway differed on how best to overcome that moving forward.
In some respects, I got to be honest with you, it kind of puts Elway in kind of a negative shade, in my opinion. He really comes off appearing to be some sort of meddlesome general manager like we hear so much about in other markets like a la a New York Jets or a place like that. While I respect John Elway, I'm wondering whether he needs to take a hands-off approach.
Well, one thing to keep in mind is I can understand that perception, but it wasn't John Elway whose idea it was to, when the Broncos needed a fire lit under their behinds, to have John come down and talk to the team. John Fox, on several occasions, when he felt like his team needed that extra boost or maybe a little bit of a talking to, I think with one exception, he would ask John Elway to come down and talk to the team. And so I understand that perception of kind of John Elway maybe sticking his nose where it doesn't belong and meddling with Fox's process and his relationship, even maybe with the players. But the reality is the opposite of that. I think Fox leaned a little too heavily on Elway and his whole persona of being the Duke of Denver and the legend that he is with the Broncos organization and ultimately everybody's boss to come in and try and scare him straight.
Okay. So let's go to the next step. Obviously, Denver is looking for a coach now. In other words, you don't feel then a coach who wants to kind of rule the sideline, you don't think a coach should be worried about what the perception is here right now, perhaps maybe in Denver?
No, actually, I think any prospective head coach that's interested or could be contacted about the job opportunity in Denver is well within their rights to be a little bit concerned just because of the way everything went down there at the end. I mean, think about it as a head coach candidate potentially walking into a situation where a guy who won four straight AFC West titles was relieved of his duties.
Right.
And, I mean, it's really unprecedented in that sense. I mean, I think the closest thing you can point to that is similar is the way the Chargers walked away from Marty Schottenheimer. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, I think there's, over the last 3-4 days, some issues in Denver, some troubles in paradise, so to speak, that definitely are probably going to give some coaches and maybe even the upper echelon guys like the, you know, your Dan Quinn from Seattle, maybe a little bit of pause in being too eager to, you know, jump on the opportunity. I mean, 6 months ago, if anybody in the coaching world would have known that, you know, if the Broncos were looking for a head coach 6 months ago, you'd have a line of guys out the door trying to get the job. And not to say that there aren't plenty of guys interested. I'm sure that there are. But there are new complications. You know, maybe some of the issues go a little bit deeper. Peyton Manning's health issues and apparent, you know, hitting that wall down the stretch complicates it. Elway's seeming refusal to, you know, part ways with Manning and go to the next phase with Osweiler and what lies beyond that might give some guys pause, kind of feeling like they're being held hostage, so to speak, by Peyton Manning. But also on the flip side, some guys might think, wow, what a privilege to be able to walk into a place like the Broncos that has such a roster and be able to have your quarterback be Peyton Manning. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out, but I think you're right that, you know, with what's come to light over the last few days, some guys might be a little bit more hesitant to jump on the opportunity than they otherwise would have been.
What's the word on the ground there right now with regard to potential replacements? Obviously, there's been. I've already read the reports that apparently, and I think you guys had it over on Mile High Huddle. Apparently, Peyton Manning will be part of the coach process of some nature.
Yeah.
I guess the other good news for him is it appears that San Fran is hiring internally, so Gase is off the 49ers list.
Yeah, I mean, right now, as far as the head coaching search, the four names that are most being bandied about is Dan Quinn, but he's off the board for 3 weeks. Could be off the board for 3 weeks if the Seahawks win and beat the Packers this Sunday, but... And then you have, of course, Adam Gase, who, you know, the 49ers flew into Denver yesterday, met with Gase behind closed doors for 8 hours. Mm-hmm. The word on the street was that they were bent on not letting him leave the room without signing a deal. But also there was a rumor that Elway made it clear to Gase that he wanted him to check with Elway before he made any kind of official commitment with the Niners. And so Gase left that meeting without it being consummated, and ultimately I think the Niners got a little bit insulted by that. They're not used to being, you know, put on the back burner, and they went internally. So that leaves Gase on the market, and you got to think that with Gase's relationship to Elway and who knows what's been said behind closed doors, but you got to believe that Gase, you know, has a strong suspicion somehow that he's very high up on the list for replacing Fox's head coach. But then you've got Gary Kubiak, who's kind of the fan favorite that everybody's talking about, you know, him and Elway going way back as players and, you know, their coach-player relationship during the Super Bowl years and all that stuff. A lot of guys think Gary Kubiak would be a good fit. But then again, you know, he just removed his name from consideration from any of the head coaching opportunities in the NFL, saying that he wants to stick with the Ravens. And So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But the dark horse who's emerged is the defensive coordinator for the Detroit Lions, Terrell Austin, who, you know, coached his butt off, so to speak, in Detroit this year. That defense, really tough. Finished number one as the rush defense, number two total defense behind only Seattle. So those are the four names right now. I think more guys will come to light as this process moves along, but those are the top four candidates today.
The it's no secret the Broncos have got some free agency issues. Any coach taking over, you know, you talk about, well, this is a roster, this is a real roster that people would want to have, you know, on their resume. It might not be the same roster. In fact, it's looking like a lot of those guys won't be there, will they?
Well, I mean, I think at this stage, until they cement their situation with their head coach, you know, the whole free agency thing is going to be put on the back burner. But I could say with confidence that the Broncos are going to do everything in their power to keep Demaryius Thomas in Denver. And, you know, just 6-8 weeks ago, he told on an interview on NFL Network, he made it clear that he's willing to give the Broncos a hometown discount just to stay in Denver. Julius Thomas, my personal opinion is that he's as good as gone. He really faded down the stretch, and kind of his lack of physicality and intensity, I think, has turned the organization off from him. But, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of top guys, role players like Terrence Knighton, Raheem
right.
Moore,
right.
Randall Franklin, and the list goes on that are unrestricted free agents. But fortunately for the Broncos, they're probably going to have close to about $35 million in cap room for 2015. So they have some room to get some stuff done, as well as signing their draft class and maybe even bringing a few guys in from the outside from the free agent market. So it's still a little too early to see how that's going to go for sure. But the top guys I would expect the Broncos to really go out of their way to try and retain are Demaryius Thomas, Orlando Franklin, Terrence Knighton, and even Virgil Green, the backup tight end.
Okay.
So I have a question for you. Are you saying it's more or less a foregone conclusion Peyton Manning's going to be back?
Well, I mean, John Elway said yesterday that, you know, he danced around saying that, you know, because Peyton Manning came out and said after the game that he's going to take some time. So Elway kind of danced around the issue of, have you talked mm-hmm. to Manning? What has Manning told you? But he did say, without actually having to say it, by saying that Manning's going to be involved in the head coaching search. So.
Right.
I mean, that kind of tells you in and of itself, just what was it? Just Christmas Eve, Manning came out and said that he plans on returning to the Broncos in 2015, quote-unquote,
right.
if the Broncos will have him back. And so I think Elway definitely wants Manning back for 2015. I think he's expecting it and planning on it, obviously. And beyond that, he's actually under contract with the Broncos through 2016. So he has two more years left on his deal. Most people believe that if he comes back, it'll be for one last hurrah, 2015. He's only 3,000 yards away from breaking Brett Favre's all-time passing yards record. And so he'll get to pad his stats a little bit and maybe make one final push for that elusive, you know, second Super Bowl ring. But I would say not quite a foregone conclusion, but just reading between the lines and what Elway said and what he hasn't said, I'd be shocked if Peyton Manning chose not to return. But some of that, too, just – you know, one more thing, hinges on, I think, Adam Gase. If Gase ends up being named the head coach, I think you can pretty much count on Manning returning. If Gase gets passed over and Austin gets it or Quinn gets it or somebody else, there's a chance that Manning might not want to deal with a new offensive system or a new, you know, coaching, the ups and downs of a new coaching administration. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Would Manning restructure his contract for this year?
I don't think so. I really don't.
Okay.
I mean, you know, Manning believes he's worth what they're paying him, and you know, he's helped him out a little bit in terms of moving money around. But at the end of the day, he's still gotten paid the same amount, you know, that he was contractually obligated. Well, the Broncos were contractually obligated to pay him, but no, and you know, maybe if the Broncos were in a tighter spot with their cap. It might be a more pressing issue, but really with close to $35 million projected of salary cap space, they've got plenty of room to get done what they need to get done.
Okay. We've got a call coming in. Chad, you up for a call if anybody wants to throw one at you?
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks for calling Frat House Sports. What's on your mind?
Hey, I had a few questions for Chad.
Sure.
Yeah, my name's Elwood, and I'm from Indianapolis, Indiana. And I know a little bit about Peyton Manning. You know, I think I've been to every Peyton Manning game that was played in Indianapolis, and I have definitely been to every single Andrew Luck game. But I may have missed a few in college when he first came because I couldn't afford him. But who would turn down $19 million because they don't want to play anymore? I know Peyton. He's a good businessman. I'm thinking he's wanting to buy the Titans. He's going to need capital. I say Peyton's going to play next year because nobody in their right mind is going to turn down $19 million. And when they say he's working with the coach, a.k.a. they're not going to hire anyone unless Peyton puts his okay on it. So I think that Peyton's going to stay in Denver. He's going to okay the coach. He's going to okay the extra players. Everything's going to be the Peyton Manning way, and I think he's going to stay another year, and it wouldn't shock me if he stayed another year after that because an aging Peyton Manning is still better than anything they could get realistically coming up the pike. So I don't see him going anywhere. And no, who turns down $19 million? And I know this man. I mean, I know Peyton well. I mean, and I'm sure he wants to try for one more ring. You're right. He wants two rings like little brother. And he wants to be the quarterback who got a ring in two cities. He wants his Indianapolis ring and his Denver ring. And I think he'd like another crack at Luck. I think he wants to beat Brady. So, yeah, I don't see Peyton going anywhere, to be honest, guys. Because I hope he doesn't quit, guys, because that game with Indy. I mean, and I'm the biggest Colts fan you'll ever be, and I have totally converted to the Andrew Luck bandwagon, but I almost puddled up watching that, you know. Mm-hmm. I was joking. Yep. He shouldn't yell Omaha. He should yell Geritol.
Oh, you know? Geez. Oh,
Geritol. Geritol. You know,
oh, man.
the ending of Old Yeller was less sad, you know. You know. But, guys, I just don't see Peyton going anywhere. But I could be wrong, but, you know, I hope he can stay as long as he's halfway productive. But, you know, you can't quit and come back at his age. You know, I think Favre proved that. I think Kerry Collins proved that. You know, you got to stay in it at that age. You just can't quit and come back. I mean, when Kerry Collins was on the coach on the Colts, we were yelling Fish Stick Man, you know, and Graybeard, and, you know, I mean, that was his own fan base. You know, we took a Gordon Fish Sticks box, and we're like, oh, 2011 as a Colts fan was a rough year, but I can't really complain because I had the Manning era, and now I've got the Luck era. So I guess one year I can just, you know, suck it up. But
all right.
Yeah, I mean, I think that to speak to that, Manning doesn't have 19 million reasons to return. He has 38.
Right.
You know, he's still got $38 million left on his deal. And, you know, the one thing you said to me that was very interesting and kind of speaks to that point that Brandon brought up earlier in our conversation that, you know, why didn't they turn to Osweiler at halftime or coming out of the third quarter when Manning seemed to be so compromised? And that is that, you know, most of the NFL, and the Broncos included, believe that Peyton Manning at, you know, even 60% power is better than almost every other quarterback, you know, with very few exceptions at 100%, and that includes Brock Osweiler. So, I mean, I'm with you on that. I'd be absolutely shocked if Manning doesn't return. And just reading between the lines with what Elway said, it sounds like he would be too. But still, you know, as for today, all bets are off. He hasn't officially said it. And until we know more about who the Broncos are going to land as a head coach, we probably won't know about Peyton Manning ultimately for 2015.
They'll hire whoever Peyton says is okay. I mean, I know this man. I mean, and as far as renegotiating, guys, I want you to put that thought out of your head. Peyton Manning don't renegotiate nothing. Indianapolis offered him a deal. Would he take less money? Would he groom Andrew Luck? Would he just give them a few assurances? Nope. Out to the mountains he went.
Yep,
Peyton Manning seems like a very nice, benevolent uncle who, you know, it's just sweet. He is a tyrant of a businessman. Don't kid yourself. This guy, not that that's a bad thing. I mean, I'm a bit of a shrewd businessman myself, and I'm proud of it. And so is he. Don't kid yourself. And, you know, Indianapolis had to get rid of him because he's very loyal to his friends. And Jeff Saturday needed to go. Dallas Clark needed to go. Austin Colley needs. I mean, that whole, everybody but Reggie Wayne basically needed to go, and Peyton wouldn't have allowed it. And they got rid of Peyton. They freed up millions of dollars. They got rid of the dead weight. They got the next quarterback known to man. They got a stellar crew. I mean, and I'm you know, guys, I'm so pumped for the Super Bowl. It's going to be Skittles versus Lucky Charms. No, guys, it's the Skittles versus Lucky Charms Super Bowl. Mark it down, because I think there's something seriously wrong with Aaron Rodgers that can't be fixed by the end of the Super Bowl. And I think I'm sorry, Patriots fans, well, but I watched that game with the Ravens. That was not a blowout. I'm not sure what you're drinking, but I'd like some, but that was not a blowout by any stretch.
Well, let me do a little self-promotion for our network here, Elwood. If you're such a Colts fan there, you're going to want to be listening tomorrow night at 7 p.m. our time, Eastern time, to our Frat House Sports Show, because we're going to have a representative on from the Colts media. So you're going to want to be listening in tomorrow night, back here on Frat House Sports for that program.
Everyone thinks we're on Chicago, but we're actually on New York. Don't know why. But, yeah, I definitely tune in. Yeah, I'm really excited. I wish there hadn't been rape allegations on the Colts. They just had on the news about it. Somebody I barely heard of, because that always hurts the team cohesion. But I think as long as they can keep Tom Brady flustered and they can not, you know, and they can let Andrew Luck do this little thing he's picked up with this surgical arm, where he has like four Broncos around him, and just if he can do that little trick with New England, they're done for.
Yep.
You know, and they can just get Gronk, Dunkin' Donuts, Gronk, all they want, and it's not going to help them.
The Colts are missing one piece, though, that the Ravens had, and that's a Justin Forsett type of back.
Right.
The Colts do not have a running game since Ahmad Bradshaw went down, and I hate to tell you, the secondary in New England's pretty good.
I agree. I'm not saying
I think it's going to be a little different outcome than that Ravens game. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm just saying, too, though, that they think, I looked on a map, and they showed red. They showed a map of the United States, and red was who thought the Patriots would win, and blue is who thought the Colts would win. And Indiana, the state of Indiana, and northern Kentucky, everything that involves Louisville, and then the rest were about red. So, yeah, I agree. I mean, unless you're in Indiana or the greater Louisville area, you're not probably pulling for the Colts. But I say they got a shot at this. I'm proud of this team. Andrew Luck is amazing. I was there on year three with Peyton in the Hoosier Dome. He didn't look this good. There were a few times, not the second year. By the second year, I knew we had the real deal. But that first year Peyton came, I remember thinking, we got rid of Jim Harbaugh for this kid. Did they lose Ryan Leaf's number? You know, I mean, but my second year I knew it. I mean, I'm a football person. I realized by year two we're in. Ching, you know, we're going to get a Super Bowl in this town. You know, and Baltimore can just keep the one they stole from us. And
Elwood, I appreciate you calling. Listen, I'll make sure you tune in
a little bit. Yeah, I'm excited about that.
Make sure you tune in to us tomorrow night and be listening for our representative from Indianapolis there. Thanks, Elwood. Chad, one last question for you, and then I'm going to let you go. But we've talked a lot about, you know, we're talking. I mean, Peyton Manning, it looks like, is going to be back. You're obviously going to have yourselves a new coach, but the roster obviously probably is going to get a little bit shook up with the free agency issues. Let me ask you your personal opinion. And here's where I sit, because, listen, I was rooting for the Denver Broncos to win the Super Bowl last year, and I have been rooting all season long for them this year to win the Super Bowl if it weren't going to be my Philadelphia Eagles, which I didn't think it was ever going to be. What do you think the future holds specifically short-term for next year for this team?
Man, it's really hard to say until we know who the head coach is going to be and the whole thing about Peyton Manning gets resolved. But, you know, I think no matter who comes in as the head coach, John Elway, I mean, yesterday in the press conference, I mean, he told everyone that basically I think he mentioned World Championship and Super Bowl probably two or three dozen times. And so whoever comes in and gets this job is immediately going to be under the thumb of the Super Bowl or bust expectations. And so, you know, that's going to play out through the whole season. And you know, if we're expecting it to be Peyton Manning, the Broncos are going to be in the playoffs.
You know, and depending on who that new coach is and how what his philosophy is and how he passes that down through to his players, you know, we know for sure they'll be in the playoffs, but that's what's going to determine whether or not I think the Broncos are able to get through the playoffs, possibly get back to another Super Bowl and maybe win one. But if it goes the other way and it ends up being the beginning of the Brock Osweiler era, I think the Broncos, you know, they're probably going to be 8-8 or 9-7 and maybe 10-6 at best in a wild card because he's a young quarterback. And, you know, young QBs make mistakes. It takes time to learn the speed of the game. And as much as he's been well-mentored behind Peyton Manning and learning from Adam Gase, there's nothing like live bullets to really get somebody up to speed. And so there's still those question marks around Brock, but I think if it goes that direction, you're looking at, you know, probably a 9-7 football team.
Interesting. Okay.
All right. And on the way out the door here, Chad, let our audience, our listeners know, how can they catch up with you? How can they catch up with Mile High Huddle?
Well, milehighhuddle.com. We're part of the Scout Network, Fox Sports. You can follow Mile High Huddle on Twitter, at Mile High Huddle. You can find me on Twitter, at Chad N. Jensen. And find Mile High Huddle on Facebook, Facebook.com/Mile High Huddle. And that's pretty much it, guys. We're all Broncos, and once this coaching thing gets resolved, we'll be turning our attention to the draft, and I'll be out in Mobile, Alabama next week attending the Senior Bowl and seeing what's in store for the Broncos in that regard. So that's how you can find us, though, guys. I appreciate the opportunity.
You got it, man. And listen, let's keep this going. I'd like to get you back out here on Frat Out Sports again.
Yeah, my pleasure. Just get in touch. It'd be my pleasure.
You got it. Thanks, Chad.
Thank you, Chad.
Guys, thanks. Thanks, Brent.
Yep.
Nice. Good stuff there. Really good stuff. A lot of insight.
Yep.
I think we got a lot more there than actually what we were. From my perspective, I got more there than what I had anticipated.
I agree. I'm kind of shocked that I didn't realize that Peyton Manning was going to be part of the coaching search and that he's, you know, it sounds like a pretty much a foregone conclusion. He's coming back next year because he kind of hemmed and hawed on that at the end of the, you know, the end of the season a little. And that was interesting.
Well, it was telling. I think in some respects his hemming and hawing perhaps had a bit of – I think that was – you know, when I heard it, I immediately read it as that's a response to the loss. And then after I read about his quad problem, I read it as, well, that's a response to the injury. You know, Peyton Manning, I think, has been on record as saying that he'll play until he no longer feels he can. And, you know, listen, you go through the last five games, I guess, of the season with the kind of issues that, and it was evident to everybody that was watching the games, when you go through those kinds of problems, it probably weighed on him a little bit. You know, do I want to come back here and do this again for 20 weeks, 19 weeks again next year? And that's just the regular season? I mean, forget all the you know, preseason and stuff, you know. So that's kind of the way I read it. But, you know, Brandon, I've got to be honest. You know, I sit back and I go, I don't know. Is any other team going to extend to their quarterback the right of refusal of the coach? And is that such a good move, really, for the team?
Well, okay. In most cases, I would say no. In Peyton Manning's case, even though I'm not his biggest fan, he is more or less a coach on the field. I think we've all said that, and he's probably going to have a future in coaching if that's what he wants. You know, so you never know. I could see giving a guy like him a little say in it. There are very few guys in the league that I would think you could extend that offer to, though.
Yeah.
Because I think you're better off having those decisions made elsewhere. And here's the other part of this equation. We know he's in the twilight of his career. And if John Elway truly believes Peyton can deliver a Super Bowl to Denver, he wants to keep him happy and keep him on the field because clearly Peyton could just up and retire if he was not happy with the decisions. So, you know, he needs to be, you know, at least felt like involved, in my opinion. So that's probably why, you know, you see him.
I got you. All right. We got obviously, folks, we're going to go overtime tonight. If anybody's surprised by that, don't be. We've been doing it for the past couple of weeks. And look, if there's a season for us to go overtime, well, it should be the playoff season. So we're going to go a little bit overtime tonight. We got, you know, if you want to jump in with us here, please don't hesitate to do so. We got about 30 minutes remaining in the program. 347-826-9964. That's how you can join us. That's how you can jump in and give us your comments, as Elwood did there from Indianapolis. 347-826-9964. Or if you're Skype capable, just jump in with us. That way, loud and clear, and the chat room is open. Brandon, let's get over to the other side, I guess, because we've now spent, almost an hour just talking about the Indianapolis and Denver game. We're not going to do that near as much for the next three games. Let's get over and talk about the other side of the AFC Conference championship game. And that was that the New England Patriots, they finally, boy, I loved Uncle Mark's reference to this game. It was too hard. The New England Patriots finally beat the Baltimore Ravens in that game. When was that? That was Saturday, right?
Yep.
35-31. And this was an absolute nail-biter. And, you know, the comments I was reading over social media when it was immediately over, here were some of the comments. It was real simple. What a game! What a game! What a game! I don't know. Maybe because we were kind of sitting there, kind of rooting for New England, maybe we didn't exactly have the same sort of feeling. Maybe our feeling was more of just exhaustion. Holy smokes. Tom Brady put the ball in the air 50 times. 50! Well, that's because they only ran the ball 13. But you know something? For having put the ball in the air 50 times, he actually had really good numbers. Most of the time when you see a quarterback put the ball in the air that many times, it's not going to be a good result. Tom Brady was 33 of 50 for 367 yards, 3 touchdowns, 1 interception, and he had a 99.3 QB rating. I don't know. Where has this Joe Flacco been all year long that played against them? His numbers weren't half bad. 28 of 45 for 292, 4 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, and a 92.1. Go ahead, Brett. I'm just going to let you rip roar on this one because, I know. Go ahead.
I'm just going to be quick, honestly, because I'll give you Joe Flacco's numbers in the playoffs have been impressive. The TV broadcasts the last few weeks have thrown out some stats, you know, that are just mind-blowing. Some of the stuff he has leading the league in, and he's ahead of guys like Montana, and you know, it's amazing. So, I mean, you don't want to take anything away from Joe Flacco. I know you're not a big fan of him, but, you know, his record in the playoffs is very impressive. And that was a tough game. And me being a Patriots fan, clearly I'm going to be tainted. But of all the teams in the AFC side, this team scared me the most. And maybe it's because of the history. I mean, it's, you know, not too far removed from, you know, losing in the AFC title game in New England 2 years ago. So, you know, there was a little, you know, what's the word? Hesitation, I guess. A little pause. But, you know, all due respect to Elwood, our caller earlier, I just don't see the Colts matching up as well. They don't have a running game like the Ravens do. And they don't even have the receiving core the Ravens do. I mean, Torrey Smith and Steve Smith Sr., if we have to call him Sr., are far better than, you know, any combination of two guys you can put on Indianapolis. I'm not taking anything away from T.Y. Hilton, but they don't have the complement guy. And it's when you only have one, it's real tough. And I just don't see it from the Colts, I'll be honest with you. I just don't see it happening.
I remember as we watched this game together on Saturday, though, Brandon, you had some, I'm not going to repeat exactly what the colorful words were that you were spouting with regard to the penalty situation. We kind of thought that perhaps maybe, we'd see them tuck the flags away this week, it being the divisional round. But penalties seem to, you know, again, seem to end up playing a role in this game. And you got to wonder whether, in fact, I'm not going to blame penalties. I'm not going to blame the officiating for the kind of stuttering starts and stops of the game, but it did kind of feel that it was constantly interfering in the flow of the game.
Well, what infuriates me about it is they do all these post-play fouls. You know, I guess the you know, the one where they called the unsportsmanlike conduct on Harbaugh for the you know, was explained a little better after the fact. But during the game, we really had no idea what was going on. You know, he was a little perturbed with the Patriots declaring a normally eligible receiver ineligible. Yeah, okay, whatever. His strategy proved pretty well, and it worked for the Patriots, and it was, you know, within the rules. So there was nothing untoward there.
The evil genius.
Like.
The evil genius at work.
It seems to me, though, that, you know, if you're going to call a play, call a penalty on a foul that directly impacts the field of play. I get tired of all this. Okay, we had illegal defensive contact on the other side of the field where the ball was not even going near or, you know, it was never going that way. That's the kind of stuff that I get tired of seeing. And I think you're right. I think it screws with the flow of the game and you know, it makes it less enjoyable. I didn't see it so much in the other games. The other games this week, short of that game, seemed to be a little better. And I think if the NFL was smart, they would keep moving in that direction, call fewer penalties. You know, nobody wants to see 13, 14, you know, penalty breaks. I mean, it's just ludicrous.
In no way do I want to compare Justin Forsett to Dan Heron over at the Indianapolis Colts. But you have seen Heron over there at the Colts seemingly starting to grow into that position from 1 week to the next. And as I pointed out as we were looking at the numbers prior to Chad coming on with us, with the Colts game and the Denver Broncos, Darren had himself a very, very solid game. Justin Forsett had a very solid game against that New England defense as well. This is a New England defense that can be run on. And one of the articles that I was reading, I forget which media source it came from this past week, indicated that perhaps maybe, in fact, that's exactly what the Colts should do, is come with a heavy rushing game against New England that might take them off guard. What's your thought?
Well, I think it would be a good idea, but if you look at the stats, I mean, Justin Forsett had 24 carries for 129 yards. Meanwhile, Heron had 23 carries, only one less, and didn't even have half the yards of Forsett. I don't think he's quite the back. I don't think he's quite as capable as Forsett. Forsett was, you know, what, two or three in the whole NFL this past year. I just don't think Heron's there yet. He's a second-year back who only just started seeing, you know, game action because of the Colts situation. Yes, he may improve and grow into it, but I don't think you're going to see Heron be able to do what Forsett did. I mean, because let's look at it like this. No other back got any significant carries or yardage for the Ravens. It was all Forsett. I mean, right. And the other couple backs who've had a carry had minimal yards and, you know,
yeah.
They didn't even, it was almost like they didn't even bother. It was all Justin Forsett. I think if you have the right player, yes, he can be a thorn in the Patriots defensive side. And I'm a little shocked at that because they've always been pretty good against the run, you know, with Wolfork in the middle there. And Wolfork has
been playing
well, yeah, but they were just running, you know, around him. And there wasn't much they could do. I think maybe it has a, you know, something to do with the outside lineman more so than the interior lineman. But, you know, I don't think Heron's quite as, you know, capable. You know, he may not be able to, you know, go off tackle, go outside the tackle box like Forsett was doing. He might he strikes me as more of a straight, you know, straightforward runner, and that would put Wolfork back into play.
All right. Okay, I got you. You're absolutely right about that. I would agree with that style. Gronkowski was an absolute beast this past weekend against Baltimore. 7 receptions for 108 yards and a touchdown. What's your suspicion? Does Brady go to a different flavor of the week?
No. I if you go back and look at the Colts game from earlier in the season, that was the big game where Jonas Gray ran for 203 yards, scored 4 touchdowns. The other 2 touchdowns they score were Rob Gronkowski and the third-string tight end Tim Wright. So, you know, the tight ends were a big part of that game plan, and I don't see that changing. I think the tight ends will still – and it might not be Tim Wright. It might be Haman Anua, whatever his name is, the one we can never say. But
well, you did a better job than I could have. Go ahead.
Yeah, but I think Gronkowski's going to be there. I think they're going to try to take him out like everybody else tries to take him out of the game plan. But he's just, in the end, he's just too much of a beast. He runs through people. He runs over people. He breaks 3-4 tackles on a run after the catch. Sometimes when he gets in the red zone, he's like a man possessed, and you just can't bring him down. I mean, they have pulled his pants off during the game last week, and he still kept going. So, I just don't see – I don't think anybody has a real answer for a guy of his physical ability. Now, as he starts to get older and slows down a little, he may not be, the same beast of a guy, but clearly the injuries he's had over the last few years haven't slowed him down very much, at least not yet.
Okay, so you're expecting a fairly heavy dose of Gronkowski this week.
I think you're going to see a lot of the tight ends. I think you might see a fair amount of running. I don't know who's going to be doing it. You never know. I mean, Jonas Gray wasn't even active last week. He was on the injury report with a probable designation, which you usually expect to play. They just deemed him inactive, and, they didn't really run much last week. I mean, running wasn't really part of the game plan. So you never really know from week to week what to expect with the Patriots, but I would think you're gonna see more based on, the previous matchup. I mean, there was something that Belichick or Josh McDaniels saw that made them, run heavy in that game.
All right, let's get over to the NFC side of what happened last weekend. And we'll start it off with the Saturday game, and that was the Seattle Seahawks and the Carolina Panthers. And, well, I guess not a big surprise here. And, in fact, I think we already, we figured this one out over the weekend. The only one of the four games that were played over the weekend where, in fact, the favorite team did, in fact, cover the spread. Seattle, 31-17 over the Panthers. This was kind of a game that I think a lot of us kind of halfway, well, at least me in particular. I mean, I'm not going to speak for everybody else. But this was a game that I kind of thought would have actually occurred the week before. And that was Carolina finally out. They're done. It was a matter of time. I mean, ultimately, I think, for the Panthers, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, they had a nice little end to their season. They finished on a solid note. They got better. Cam Newton's playing a little inspired, maybe after his little car accident he had. So yeah, but at the same token, they were not a dominant team. So yeah, it was time. I think we were all tired of that whole NFC South division as a whole. I don't think anybody really thought the Panthers were going to go far. They played well. They played well for what they had. They actually hung in, for about three quarters, with Seattle, and then it just became too much towards the end. And, the defense picked six. Cam Newton, when he was going in, in the red zone close to scoring a touchdown, and that just deflated any chance the Panthers had at that point.
Russell Wilson was almost perfect, not really having to put the ball up into the air all that much, and only ending up with 15 completions, 15 of 22, 268 yards. But look at that average, 12.2 yards per reception, three touchdowns, no interception, and a 149.2 QB rating. I guess for those that like to see their quarterback safe and protected, well, Wilson didn't even run all that much, only 22 yards on seven carries. Boy, this is going to match up really, really interesting against a hobbled Aaron Rodgers when Green Bay goes to Seattle. This is really going to match up very, very interesting. Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers. I mean, I don't know, Brandon. And without getting into predictions, because we kind of want to hold those for our flagship program tomorrow night on the Frat House Sports Show. But eyeballing it, you got to give a little bit of an edge, I think from the standpoint of quarterback skill, to Aaron Rodgers, wouldn't you?
Yeah, straight up.
I mean, forget the fact he's injured. Forget that. If you leave that one alone, get that out of the picture.
Different types of quarterbacks, though. I mean, Russell Wilson can hurt you, you know, in a couple different ways. I mean, he can run, he can pass, he can scramble. I mean, Aaron Rodgers has a little bit of that, but he doesn't have the straight downfield running ability even when he's 100% healthy. I mean, he can move around in a pocket. He can run, you know, downfield 5, 10, 15 yards. I mean, we've seen Russell Wilson, you know, break off 30, 35 yards at a clip. And, you know, it just – that he has a piece of his game, and he's probably one of the faster quarterbacks at the position. And, you know, he's clearly, you know, part of a 1-2 punch between him and Marshawn Lynch as far as running for Seattle. So, you know, they're a little different. I think Aaron Rodgers is a more skilled passer. He's clearly at the top of his game right now, reading defenses, you know, picking the right guy to throw the ball to. I mean, even as you pointed out, he's a little wounded right now. He still makes the right decisions throughout the game. And we saw that last week. I mean, you know, he got to the point where, you know, it mattered. And he was there and, you know, he drove that team down, you know, to win the game.
Now, we've talked about this all season long. Seattle's got a running game. We know that. And the running game is called Beast Mode. It's called Marshawn Lynch. Last week, Carolina actually held him down, contained him a bit, probably really more to the fact. I don't think Seattle really utilized it all that often. They only ran Lynch 14 times for 59 yards. When it comes to their receiver core, it's a bunch of no-names. Again, if we look at the matchup, Green Bay, Seattle, I think you got to give a little bit of an edge to Green Bay.
Well, Seattle's the actual odds-on favorite to win the Super Bowl. So,
well, no, I understand that.
Are calling them the best team in the NFL still. I mean, even over New England.
I understand that.
So, you know, as far as the specific receiver position, yeah, I would say definitely the edge goes to Green Bay. But Seattle's just, you know, it's in Seattle. They have their, you know, their home field advantage. It's solid home field advantage. You know, it's going to be a great game. Let's just put it that way. That's going to be, you know, both games, I think, are going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, the NFC game is absolutely going to be, I think, very, very compelling. See, that's why I'm saying, when you look, in my opinion, when you take the two teams, when you take Green Bay, when you take Seattle, and you put them on paper, and you put them side by side, statistics-wise, you'd have to say that it would be Green Bay. And yet, we already know the odds makers have got this so heavily favored towards Seattle, and you've got to think that they're basing it upon what? Home field advantage, 12th man, and maybe a hobbled Aaron Rodgers. That's about it, because I think in almost all other
secondary
cases,
you're discounting Seattle's secondary, though. That, I mean, they're one of the best in the league, you know, overall. And you know, that's gonna take away one of the big advantages the Packers have with their deep receiving core. The Seattle Seahawks are one of the few teams that can match up with anybody when it comes to, you know, defensively. You know, their defensive secondary, they can line up against, you know, 3, 4, 5 receivers, and they're not dropping off like most teams are when you get down to the third and fourth cornerbacks. So, you know, I think that's part of, you know, that's a big part of Seattle's success all year. You know, is most of their games, they become low-scoring games no matter who they play.
Right.
And you know, they're always on the board at the lowest over-under, and they probably are this week. I don't know. I don't know what the two over-unders are like. But I would imagine the Seattle-Green Bay's probably got a lower number than the Colts-Patriot game.
Well, you're absolutely right about that. Sure. The Colts, no, actually, no. Absolutely wrong. No,
really?
Not at all. Yeah, no,
wow.
I've got it right here.
Okay.
Over under Seattle Green Bay 46.5. Over under on New England and Indianapolis is 54.
Okay, well, that's what I expected. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you thought it was going to be okay. I thought you said you thought it was going to be higher. Okay, no.
Oh no. It's always going to be lower. I mean, Seattle always seems to keep the points down.
They don't, right? That Seattle doesn't score points.
They don't allow a lot either. So, you know, it kind of goes hand in hand.
All right, now let's go look at the other side of the NFC matchup, and that it came about as a result of the fact that Green Bay at home ultimately did beat the Dallas Cowboys 26-21. And here we had ourselves a bit of a controversial call again. This game went back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, all through it, until right into the fourth quarter, when about halfway through the fourth, Green Bay got themselves a 13-yard pass to Richard Rodgers, and that put them up 26-21 ultimately in the end of this one. All right, let's go to the Aaron Rodgers situation for a moment. He certainly did. He certainly did look. I mean, for the injury this guy's got, I was amazed at what he was capable of doing. 24 of 35, 315 yards. That's a 9-yard average. 3 touchdowns, no interceptions, and a 125.4 QB rating. This guy is hobbling around. He can barely run, all right? He's skipping down the field, all right, at different times to get back to the huddle. The one pass, Brandon, that was into the end zone was a freaking dart. I forget who he threw it to. It was incredible. This guy's just – this is what I'm saying. This guy just blows me away. I'm shocked at how well he played considering all of the question marks about him. And it would shock me that that would be something that the odds makers would be weighing, using as a barometer perhaps for making their decision on the line on this game.
Well, you know, here's the difference. I mean, we already talked about Peyton Manning having a torn quad. Aaron has a calf. So it's a lower leg injury. It's a lot like a high ankle sprain kind of area of the leg. So he is still able to plant. He just can't run. So, yeah, his mobility's down, but he can still throw, as we clearly see. He had no issue with, you know, arm strength or getting the ball where it needed to go. And as you pointed out, it was getting there in a hurry. So, you know, as long as he's playing, you know, drop back passer and, you know, maybe having a little bit of the timing offense where you're, you know, taking 3 steps, throw into a spot on the field, you know, they're going to be fine. He just has to not re-injure it anymore, because if he goes off the field, Green Bay's in trouble, as we've seen against the game with Detroit. You know, he left the field for, you know, a half of a quarter, and Detroit puts up 2 touchdowns. They played more inspired, and he comes back and magically, okay, now Green Bay's back. So he just needs to make sure he plays within his, you know, confinement, I guess, of his injury, and do what he did last week. And I think it's going to be a very competitive game. Very competitive game. And it's, you know, if you look at that game last week against Dallas, I mean, yeah, there was a little controversy there as to whether Dez Bryant was a catch, not a catch.
Oh, there you go.
By the letter of the law, yeah, it was a right call, but I think everybody agreed it was probably a catch. You know, he probably caught the ball and you know, he was extending, trying to get a touchdown or get the ball across the goal line, you know. So,
okay, well, let me go there.
You might have a different outcome here.
Let me go there with you for that one for a moment.
Sure.
The play Brandon's talking about, of course, is the infamous was a fourth and two play. Balls at the Green Bay 32. Romo fires a 31-yard pass to Dez Bryant. It appeared he had it. It appeared he caught the ball. It appeared he maintained control of it until what? He hit the ground and then he lost control.
Correct. The rule states, you must maintain control of the ball all the way through the catch, including going to the ground. And the only difference would have been is if they would have deemed that the 3 steps he took and stretched the ball out was a football move. And that was the big argument after the game. Did he make a football move or not? And I think the refs, that could have been called either way. I think you could make a serious case that, yes, he made a football move. He took 3 steps and he extended the ball to try to score. That, to me, is a football move.
So, you know, I don't know. It's going to be discussed a lot, I'm sure, over, you know, it's going to be one of those that they bring up every time the Cowboys are in the playoffs, I'm sure. We'll see this play reviewed.
For years.
For just like the Calvin Johnson was that caused this rule to be, you know, made. So, you know, we'll see. The bigger question is if we're going to see Dez Bryant back in Dallas. I mean, he is a free agent. It does sound like he wants to stay and they do want to keep him.
Well,
so
that's what it sounds like. Yep.
I think the bigger surprises are not going to be, I don't think we're going to see DeMarco Murray staying in Dallas.
I don't either.
DeMarco Murray was insulted by a contract offer they made. They're not going to pay him what he thinks he's worth. He can get more than the $4 million for 4 years they offered him. I mean, open market last year, I think there were some players who got like about $5 million a year. I think Murray will see 5 or 6 average somewhere, but not in Dallas.
I'll touch on that one in just a moment on the DeMarco Murray situation. But let me go back to the controversial play because I want to get your opinion on this. The ruling on the field was that it was a catch, and Green Bay challenged it, and it was reversed in favor of Green Bay. Which I think, to at least some of us here at Frat House Sports, were a little bit surprised at. You're acquiescing at this point, or at least, I guess, indicating, hey, it probably was a catch. Do you think the rule should be changed?
Yes. I think the rule is too harsh, or what's the word? It needs to be refined. How about that? There are many times where you see a guy catch the ball, and on the way down doesn't come down to the ground and maintain control, and it should not be a catch. I think the fact that Dez Bryant clearly took 3 steps and clearly made an extension of his arm to try to score, I think that should have negated the quote-unquote, you know, didn't maintain control all the way to the ground deal. So, yeah, what you need to see is somehow refine it to allow for such a thing in the future. Because, you know, I think that play, you know, to me it just looked wrong. It looked like a catch, should have been a catch. And, you know, that's it. That's the long and short of it. You know, they need to figure out a way to enforce the rule better, let's just say. You know what I mean? It's a catch-22. I agree with the spirit of the rule, because, you know, you got to maintain, you know, some modicum of control when you're going down to the ground. You know what I mean? You can't just, you know, have the ball for a half a second and call it a touchdown. That I don't agree with. This particular play, I think is going to cause for at least a question, or you know how the NFL refocuses things. I think they're going to – I don't think the rule is going to get, you know, letter and verse changed, but they may find a way to tweak the enforcement going forward.
Right. With regard to the Dez Bryant and DeMarco Murray issue, and yes, I've read the exact same things that you have, that in fact, apparently Jerry Jones has indicated that they're going to do everything they possibly can to keep Dez Bryant. Obviously, it would appear that perhaps maybe DeMarco Murray might be expendable. As you pointed out, I read the same report you did yesterday, that agent indicating that they were insulted by the $4 million a year, 4-year contract, $16 million that Murray was offered. Personally, I frankly think that the Cowboys should be making a greater effort to keep Murray and don't worry about Bryant, because out of this coming draft, you can get yourself a good number one or number two receiver out of this current draft. And I don't think that it would be that big of a loss. Dallas is going to end up spending a boatload of money on Dez Bryant, who has been at different times a distraction and a problem off the field. And they're only going to put up more headaches for him, when in fact it was DeMarco Murray that carried your team for you for the year.
Well, I agree with you to a point. Here's where I disagree. every year you see somebody like a Justin Forsett emerge in the NFL. It seems a lot easier to plug in running backs than it does top shelf. And when I say top shelf, I'm talking Calvin Johnson, Dez Bryant, Julio Jones type receivers. Yes, you can draft a guy. And last year we saw like Sammy Watkins and Kelvin Benjamin, a lot of the first round picks that made an impact this year. But to get somebody that's head and shoulders above the rest like a Dez Bryant, yes, he is a pain in the quote unquote, but you can't, you know, he can be a distraction. He's constantly yelling at coaches and players on the sidelines, but you can usually depend on him to make that catch at the end of the game, which, you know, some say he made, some say he didn't make. You know, he's usually a big force. DeMarco Murray has been injury prone, and they used him hard this year. You know, you got to wonder, you know, a four-year contract, you really think, you know, a guy that's been injury prone, that had as many touches and as many, you know, games where he just grounded out, you really think he's going to be that good for four more seasons? I don't know. That's where I draw the difference. Every year we pick up a new running back, you know. Last year, you know, we saw other guys step up, you know, and this year we have. So, I mean, we're just talking about Dan Heron. I mean, he just came out of, you know, necessity, and all of a sudden he's starting to look like a little decent player for Indianapolis, you know. I think it's easy to replace.
I think Uncle Mark makes a good observation when he said it seems apparent that the writing is on the wall that Jerry Jones is going to be looking to bring Adrian Peterson in. Now, I'll be curious to see whether he ends up paying him more than $4 million a year. Probably not. One would hope not at any extent. All right, listen, let me wrap it up because we've had a long program here and we've had a really insightful program. And I want to thank everybody who has listened in this evening. It's been a really, really fun program. And let me start off by thanking our guest, Chad Jensen from MileHighHuddle.com. Please get over and check them out. Check them out over on Twitter, Mile High Huddle, and on Facebook as well, Mile High Huddle, and on the Internet. All right? So many thanks to Chad Jensen. As I pointed out, we are just beginning what should be a really, really fun and highly energetic week of programming this week, and I have a feeling it's going to even flop over into next week and probably even the week thereafter. But tomorrow night, we will be coming back here to you with our flagship program, the Frat House Sports Show, 7 p.m. Eastern Time right here, and we'll be going for two straight hours. But the highlight of the program will be when we have Philip B. Wilson from ColtsBlitz.com, obviously, from the Indianapolis Colts. And we're also going to be joined simultaneously by Chris Simino of PatriotsInsider.com. Ah, you see what I did there? Yeah, I only matched up the two AFC Conference Championship media guys. Yeah, we're going to get them both on together, and we're going to be breaking down the AFC Conference Championship game. That is going to be a lot of fun. You are absolutely going to want to be listening in tomorrow night to the Frat House Sports Show right here, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Now that you can get it live at that. I will be back here with you on Saturday doing a wrap of this whole week. I don't know if I'm even going to have enough time within 2 hours to get through everything that we might want to put on that program. But I will be back here with my regular Frat House Saturday program at 2 p.m. Eastern Time right here on the Frat House Sports Radio Network. Ah, but more. Yes, one more. A special Sunday edition of our Frat House Sports NFL. Yes, it'll be our NFL special program. Yes, Frat House Sports is NFL special program right before the conference championship games, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And I'm going to be joined by Jim Williams and Chris Franklin and Eric Purdy and anybody else I can get in there, plus our regular Frat House gang. Oh, it's going to be a talk, a sports talk free-for-all. Make sure you're here for those. Brandon, thank you again for being here. Thank you to Elwood, and thank you to everybody out there who has listened in this evening. Please make sure you're here with us again tomorrow night for the Frat House Sports Show. Catch you then.